And here we are. It is a Friday morning, Friday, March the 5th, 2021. You are tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. And this program can be heard every Friday morning from 11:15 a.m. till 12 p.m. It repeats on Sunday mornings from 8:15 until 9 a.m. and then on Wednesday from 3:15 until 4 p.m. And you can get all the episodes online, wwgh1071.com. Just go to Program Archives and they are all there. And I'll tell you how important the repeats are. I'm going to get the name of the person, but we had a message on Sunday morning, somebody saying, what is the name of the pastor who's on the air? So I'm going to get the name of that person so we can mention them during the program today. But the host of the program is Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Tim's here with us today also. Also, I want to remind everyone that we're also co-sponsored by Jeff's Bicycle Shop in Prospect, Ohio, for all your bicycle and repair needs. And also Mid-Ohio Insurance Solutions. We're sponsored by them also. Great, great group there. Anyway, I am Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, and we are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our service times are Sunday morning, 9:30 and 11 o'clock. We do have Sunday school in the 9:30 afternoon time if you want to come to Bible study or bring your children for Sunday school. And we have midweek service. And so much going on that if I sat here and talked about just that this morning, that's what we do all morning. So I want to welcome all of you to the show, and good morning.
Good morning.
It was a Steve Kane who Stan Kane. So Stan, if you're out there listening, we thank you for inquiring.
Thank you, Stan. We've just had so much to talk about. You know, Scott and I used to do a show together called Over the Back Fence, and it was just about community things going on and different things of that nature, and that's kind of what this show is, too. We talk about current events from a biblical point of view, and the current events never end. They don't seem to even slow down a little bit, and as we see this week, you know, it's more of the same. Last week, we got our feet tangled up in Mr. Potato Head. We won't be doing that, and there's a lot more important things to talk about. Let me try to talk about something really good that happened to me this week, though. I went over to what's the Hope Center name?
The what?
The pregnancy center.
Something Hope Center or something Hope something Center.
The Hope Pregnancy Center here in town. It's just down the street.
I'm not sure.
Interesting. They're just across from the palace, kind of quarter. And it's interesting. You're a man about Marion. And Marion isn't that huge. And I knew very little of them other than they had a sign on the corner that said Voice of Hope Pregnancy Center, Women's Center, Voice of Hope Women's Center. So I took a box. We had from our stuff that had been donated to us and people brought in, we had two huge totes of baby toddler clothes, newborn clothes, some really nice things. And I was asked to take those in. So I took them in, and I went around back and called them and let them know I was there. And they came out and had me come in. And I went in, and it was such a nice look right off the bat, even going in the back. I could see how nice and neat the place was. And I said, would you mind giving me a tour? So she did. And Scott, I got to tell you, I was amazed. You're talking about a gem in the middle of our community. It's two stories. And it is it is as nice and pristine as any new doctor's office you would go into. And as we went, the first room we went into was a receiving room for donated items. And then on down the hallway was on the right, there was a classroom with a table in it and a playpen, because sometimes mom's got to bring kids. On the left was a complete gynecological office with, the ultrasound, the table, everything. And then up from that was a room full of really nicely well-organized baby needs and supplies and things that all had numbers on them. And I'll get to that in a minute. But then they had the main central office. They had another teaching room, a counseling room. Upstairs, they had another huge sorting area. So let me just fill you in a little bit of what they do. First of all, they take in women that are pregnant, obviously, and they help them. They teach them parenting skills, mothering skills, the things that they need. They let them go ahead and watch their they can see their baby and its growth and its development. How neat is that? But what they do, and this is something I felt was really a key to this, is the ladies that come in, they actually minister to. they get what they call baby bucks for everything they do, everything they complete. It is a faith-based organization, so there certainly is faith-based material that they go through. But there's, you know, learning and all these different things and classes they come to and volunteer hours and being the very people that organize some of these things that come in and work. I went upstairs. There was one big room that was nothing but totes all the way around that were clear. And they were organized by child, age, what type of clothes, all the way through. So if you need something, you would just go there and there it is. But they get these baby buck hours for what they do, or dollars. And each thing they do, they accumulate that. And then they can go in this room where all these things are, and they can say, oh, I want to save my baby bucks for this one. It's 12 of them, or this or that. And the neat thing about that, rather than just giving things out, these people are actually, these young mothers are actually working towards that. And they minister to the young men too. And, you know, those are, you know, the question comes up sometimes, I hear it a lot, when people talk about, you know, what's your alternative? If you don't like abortion, what's your alternative? And, well, that's an alternative. They'll say, you guys don't do anything about it. You don't want it, but you don't help. And that's simply not true. Our STO Center in Columbus we've talked about is wonderful. But I had such a blessing going through this the other day, because here I was just running an errand, and I got a huge blessing out of it. I was so impressed when I left there by the management, the people, what they're doing, the heart for these people. And this is a nonprofit. I mean, but it's right here in the heart of Marion. And, you know, if you're a mom that finds herself suddenly with child, go, please, talk to these people. They'll walk you through it. They'll teach you what it's going to be like, how to be a mom, give you those skills. And I was just so, so impressed with that. And I just want to tell Marion, what a gem we have right here in the middle of Marion that I did not even realize was there. And very quality, qualified people. Just a beautiful thing.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things like that. There used to be bulletins put out, and I think it's just stopped because of the pandemic, that people, not as many people are in offices as they used to be. But they used to put out bulletins on things like that about centers people could go if they had mental issues, mm-hmm. that were free, and places you could go if you were homeless or you were a vet or you, just about anything would fall under this, if you had kids. So it's nice that those things do exist. I don't know if the general public ever becomes fully aware of it, because you say, well, how are we going to let the general public know? Well, we do say it on radio and we do put it in the newspaper, but not everybody listens, and it's just...
Well, one good thing... I know that they're tied in with Marion's Job and Family Services Department, so they are a resource for them also to let people know when they come there, hey, this is available. And I'll tell you, I invited their director to take a Sunday and speak at our church and go through everything they do. And I don't make all the decisions in the church, but I certainly am on board to see how we can support this ministry. And I think it's great.
Well, you know, it's interesting because until about 15 years ago, Turning Point, which is now opening up locations in other cities, I think in Delaware, I'm not sure if it's open yet there, but they were working toward that. Until they moved to the big location here in Marion about 15 years ago, Not many people knew about that. I used to ask people, do you know about Turning Point? Do you know it's there? Do you know what they do? Nobody did when they used to be on Center Street. It was a small, unmarked building, and that was done on purpose so people wouldn't know what was going on there for people who would go looking for their spouse who they might have, you know, treated very poorly. But until they moved to the big building, that was a big unknown in the community.
We have, as you come into the church, as most churches do, we have a rack with all kinds of information and just a number of different things that people can take. And one of them is one that's been published every year that goes out that you can actually get at any of the social agencies in Marion, Job and Family Services. Just call and ask them for one. But it lists basically every type of need in Marion County and who services those needs, whether it's counsel for older adults, whether it's senior welfare, just anything, homelessness, food, clothing, whatever those needs are, is listed in there, and we keep those on hand in the church. I do know that this particular group, they told me they have two other places. I'm not going to say where because I'll say the wrong places. I think I know, but it slipped my mind. But anyway, they have a couple of other places, and Turning Point is huge. We try to, once or twice a year, take quite a few things, nice things, into Turning Point, because a lot of times the ladies that will end up at Turning Point, they show up with their clothes on their back, or their kids show up with their clothes on their back, and now what do we do? And those people are so great at helping and reaching out. And there is a lot of that. But we need to recognize the good and direct people and go after that. And then there's always it's a tough business to manage, too. Anytime you're in the helps ministry, it is difficult because you're going to have an element of people that will not desire any change. They'll only desire, what can you give me now at this minute? And that's hard. Because I know people that are truly in, that have a heart for helping other people, and that have a heart for doing what's right. You kind of pour your heart into it, and you kind of pour your heart into those people. And many times, once their needs are met, you don't see them anymore. And that's hard because you want to know how they did. You want to watch them grow, so to speak. And you don't always get that, but it's not for us to be something to become jaded about, because God calls us to be that kind of person all the time. And it's not about when someone comes to Community Christian Fellowship for help, it's not about, you know, can we chalk one up for us? It's how have we helped that person and met them where they are. And that not just physically, but spiritually. Spiritually has to, in the church's work, the spiritual needs to be where the most of the emphasis on. Because if you heal the spiritual, many times you're going to heal the physical. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting because we've talked about this many times. But, you know, unfortunately, there are groups of people, certain people, who can change and learn new ways to manage their life. But there are also people who are, you know, it's the syndrome of my rent's due on the first of the month. I can't pay my rent. I go into hysterics. I either borrow the money, I get it from an agency, somebody pulls me out, so for 30 days I'm okay, and I don't worry about it for 30 days, and then the same thing happens the following month. And they never change.
But you can.
You can.
I've got a friend right now that...
Charlie, do you remember...
I got a friend right now that has spent quite a few years in prison. Pretty rough character, to be honest with you. And if you'd see him coming, you'd think, wow, pretty rough-looking character. But the truth of the matter is, since he got out of prison a few years ago, he decided to change his life. And he decided to start seeking God. And now, he is one of the most sought-after remodelers in our area, and he does great work for people. He's honest, he's kind, he's up front. Yeah, people can change, and they do. It's neat. And you know, we always have to, you know, if you're not growing, you're plateauing. And when you're plateauing, it's real easy to revert.
You know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with somebody last night, and somebody I've known a long time, and I knew their parents for a long time. And one of their parents had been married several times. And, you know, the first couple marriages were not good marriages. Now, eventually, one ended well. But there was this conversation, because this person was from a different generation where the wife did the cooking and the wife did the cleaning and the wife did all that sort of thing. And there was always this question, well, why did this person keep getting married and stay in bad marriages that clearly they knew were bad longer than they should have? And kind of the always common wisdom was, well, maybe you can make it better. But, you know, when you really dissect it, was it a fear on their behalf? Who's going to do the laundry? Who's going to do the cooking? Who's going to do this?
I hope not.
Well, you hope not, but you know what? It's, I tell you, people are more worried about that than you think.
I guess because I never have. I to me, marriage is far different than that. Marriage is a covenant commitment for life, and it's a commitment between you, your spouse, and God. And that requires a lot of give and take, a lot of growing, a lot of trusting, and that's where it's all at. You know, when I, and we do have these thoughts sometimes, what if thoughts, and just in the last couple of weeks, my dear brother-in-law Dean going home to be with the Lord, my sister's in that place now, what do I do now? But so sometimes that spurs you having that thought, well, what would I do if my wife was not here? And I do have thoughts of, the hardest thing is not being able to say something to her or talk to her or share with her. I never for one minute worry about how I'm going to eat, dress, walk, talk, you know, because that's something I hope I have grown to be self-sufficient in over my life. And not that she doesn't do sometimes more than her fair share, but I know that I could pick up the slack if I had to. I want to read something this morning that's kind of interesting. And this goes back to Israel and when they left the Promised Land. And Joshua was a great leader and a great man of God that led them for so long. And they trusted God, and God gave them victories. And there was just such this trusting relationship and recognizing of the people of Israel that it was God that was in control, and Joshua was their man of the hour. But then we read in Judges chapter 2, it says, "The angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Blochem and said, I led you up from Egypt and brought you out of the land of which I swore to your fathers and said, I will never break my covenant with you." So God brings them up out of the slavery that they were in Egypt forever. Matter of fact, if you look at those great pyramids in Egypt, most of those pyramids and all those things were all built by slaves and worked very hard as slaves. It says, "You shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land, but you shall tear down their affairs, but you have not obeyed my voice, and you have done this. Therefore I say unto you, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be thorns in your side, and their God shall be a snare to you." What God had basically said, you know, when I give you these lands to take, you go and take them wholly. Wholly, not holy. But take them wholly, and don't get tangled up in the affairs of these nations that are do not have the same faith and ideals that you have, you know, or it's going to be a problem. Well, they didn't do that. And because of that, some of the things in the culture that were not good started blending into their culture. And it became a cultural situation. Then he says, so it was, the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the children of Israel. People lifted up their voices and wept. And they called on the name of the place of Bochim, and they sacrificed there to God. When Joshua had dismissed the people, the children of Israel went east to his own inheritance to possess his own land. Of course, as that was allotted to them following leaving the going into the Promised Land. And then verse 7 it says, "So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua." Okay, they had a strong leader. They served the Lord. Their families understood what God did. They knew where they had come from and all those things. So they served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So they followed. You know, there was a word was out. The elders were all, you need to remember when this happened and how faithful God was. And it says, now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him on the border of his inheritance in Timoth-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gash. And when all the generations had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done in Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, which you know were the false idolatry gods. And they forsook the Lord of their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them. And they bowed down to them and they provoked the Lord in anger. And I'll stop there. But the point I'm trying to make here is that many times we have wonderful good things generationally. And I'll look at faith as one of those things. And when the people that are solid in faith begin to die off, and they haven't passed that on properly, and people haven't experienced what they had to experience, it makes them experience things that they never might have had to if they'd have just listened and learned. And it goes in that cycle of things falling down, people losing everything sometimes that they have, and then sitting back and a grassroots starts out and says, okay, we just lost all this. If we're going to survive, we've got to do this. And in my belief, and in my case, I believe it's a turning back to God from turning away from God. And of course, all the biblical principles in loving and caring and teaching that come along with that. And Scott, I'll tell you, I'm not just talking about the pagan world versus the organized church. I'm not talking about that at all, because there's plenty in the organized church that are just serving themselves. I know that. And we recognize that, too. And they're taking all they can get their hands on. You know, to them, it's more of a corporate model than it is a spiritual model. And if you think about it, if you look back, Tim, I'm going to ask you about your grandma.
Okay.
What kind of lady was your grandma? I don't know this, so I'm asking Tim, okay? Tim, what kind of lady was your grandma?
She's very nice. She's, she taught us all. She taught my mom about religion, you know what I mean? When she got older and she got her Social Security check, first thing she did, 10% went straight to church before anything else was even done. She loved everybody. She took care of everybody.
So she did that out of love.
Yeah.
Even the giving part. Yeah. That's what she knew she should do. See, that's my point. I don't know Tim's grandma. Never did. Never met her. My point is, if you talk to most people today and ask them about grandma or grandpa, more people in the United States are going to go back to a loving grandma that loved everyone, that helped, that was there. She was satisfied in her own life. It's not like she was felt like she was wanting or needing, or she needed the new Virginia Slims commercial, you come a long way, baby. She was happy. And most people don't remember that commercial, do they? I'm dating myself. But what happens is that when the next generation does not follow that generation, and then the next generation doesn't have that. Now, today, if I would talk to most teenagers and ask them, tell me about your grandma. Well, first thing they're going to do is tell you about somebody that's my age. And they're probably going to talk about all kinds of things, but very little of it will be about her faith. Very little will be about her religion. Very little will be about the wonderful grandma and the things she did. And it's the same with grandpas. They're not going to talk much about, you know, grandpa was pretty strict about this and that, and he took me out in the wood shop and taught me how to build things and make things. They don't have that. And we did. And those values, those good, solid values, disappear when they're not taught, when they're not shared, and when they're not lived. And we become such a consumer-oriented society that we just go buy what we want. You know, Johnny wants something, so rather than Grandpa say, come on downstairs, let's build you one. Let's find an old bicycle and see if we can't make it new again. No, we just say, well, hey, go to Walmart and pick him a bicycle and spend around this amount of money, and then you have hands off, you take it, you drop it in front of him. And unfortunately, there's less appreciation in that than there was the other. And fill in the blanks here, Scott.
Well, I tell you, grandparents are an interesting subject because I knew all of my grandparents very well, and most of them were still alive when I was in my 30s, and I still have one alive now, a grandparent.
Good for you.
So I know them very well into adulthood. But the thing about it was, what I noticed and got to notice because of that was I have nothing but good feeling toward my grandparents. I do remember the things that they did and the places we went and that sort of thing. But you know, my parents, who were their kids, and my aunts and uncles, who were their kids, they have a different feeling about them. Now, it's not a bad feeling. It's just different because your parents are more strict. Mm-hmm. Your parents might, well, my mother's side of the family, her parents had four kids. They had less money than they had by the time I came around. They were more expendably cash-wise by the time I came around. So there was that. That was different. They're not supporting four kids then. And, you know, people are different at different phases in their lives. Like, I know when people are parents, they're stressed. They're trying to feed their family. And some of them, unfortunately, turn to things like alcohol. That's a common thing. So the kids remember them that way. But the grandkids never saw that.
You're right.
By the time they come around. And they never see it.
So I say, to go back to that, I think that it leaves the grandparents with a responsibility of, you got a clean slate here.
Yeah.
Let's teach them what's right. Let's
Absolutely.
Teach them the truth. That's why I think you see a lot of grandparents taking their grandkids to church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of grandparents doing the things the parents should have been doing. But I really wish that people could recognize in society today, one of the things that happened here with the children of Israel were they were buying into all the newest and the best, which is this new cultures in the different lands they came into. Wow, that's different. Let's try that. And they weren't good things that they bought into, because we're always enticed. Even though some good things look good, we can be enticed very easy to things that aren't so good. Right?
They weren't satisfied, so they kept saying, you know, so they tried, well, let's try this one, maybe that'll satisfy. When they had, if they would have gone back to their original, mm-hmm. they would have been satisfied.
They would have been satisfied because they'd have gone back, and then the grandparents, you know, could and should continually teach, and hopefully by the time, and like you said, it's generational, by the time those kids are adult, like my kids are having kids now, I don't have any greats, but I have grandkids, you know, it's getting to the point that then they become to come into that time of their life, our children do, when the stress is a little bit less, and then they'll be ready for that grandparent, that next generation.
Well, you know, it's funny when you talk about great, because obviously still having a grandparent around, there are great-grandkids, and probably getting pretty close to great-great-grandkids mm-hmm. at this point. But, you know, they even have a completely different perspective than I have. When I look at them, I look at somebody who in my life was active, was, you know, even though they were grandparents, they drove, they lived independently, they did all those things, they had more time, but now they're really getting up there in age, so the great-grandkids just see them as, you know, Nana or something like that, and it's somebody in the room who obviously is not going to, like my grandparents, for instance, took me to the park, and I remember to pick acorns. Now, at this age, they're not going to take the great-grandkids to the park to pick acorns. It's just not possible. But, you know, I when you hit somebody at a different time in their life, you just get a different person.
You do. But hopefully you always get a consistent person if they're steadfast on a solid rock in who they are and what they believe, and they're not so driven by the winds of change. And they keep that solid footing. I think that one of the things that's so hard today for our young people is they're not seeing solid footing. I'm not going to mention districts at all, because I know of several around here recently. Just in the last couple months, there's one school district that's lost two students to suicide, a freshman and a senior. There's another one that I know that has lost one. These kids are really in a difficult way. And, you know, one of the things my grandparents did was they taught me some forms of hope. Now, I had a very solid mother. I had a very disciplinarian father who was life of the party, unless you were bad. And my mother was more so of a perfectionist, and she could be disciplinarian too. But it was just, it worked. Whatever that was, it worked. And my grandparents, I still go back in my mind, my grandfather on my mother's side was not the most patient man in the world with children. But I still remember him taking me down in his basement and teaching me how he made knives. And, you know, driving the pins and spacers in and all that stuff and teaching me how to make. And, you know, I carried those things. And as your parents do that, you begin to work in your mind about, hey, I can do this, I can do that. And I think a lot of what my grandparents, never knew my grandfather on my dad's side, died a year before I was born. I knew my grandmother, loved her dearly. She was the hardest working lady I've ever known. She raised a huge garden and supported my one whole family with it that she lived with, along with herself. But Grandma always had a smile. She always had a hug. And she usually had dip running out of the corner of her mouth. but she was a hard worker. She loved God. She loved us. She never bought me a thing. I don't think Grandma ever bought me a thing.
You know, one of the stories I tell to a lot of people, because it was one of the, just as a stark moment in your life, my grandma, she had four kids. She raised them. All her kids loved her. There was never a bad moment there. She was always there. She did all those things. She had lost her first child very young. She worked. She headed union. She owned drive-in movies when those were big. You know, she was a smart lady. Then when grandkids came along, when I came in the picture, there were, from her kids, there were, you know, eight or nine of us. She always babysat us, took us places to the movies, to things like this. And then she got great-grandkids. And I remember the oldest one, she did babysit them and do that sort of thing. And one day, one of the grandkids came to her, and I remember I was in the room and said, could you watch my whatever the baby's name was, the new great-grandchild? And she said, no. And I thought, my goodness, I can't imagine her not wanting to be around kids. I heard her say no to babysitting. She babysat all us grandkids. She babysat her kids, obviously. And I asked her about it. When they left, I said, you're not going to do that? And she said, I am of an age now where I don't feel comfortable if I would fall asleep. I'm not saying I think I would, but if I did.
That's very responsible.
Yeah, or if, and she said, and one thing she said that sticks with me to this day, and I think about this when I'm in the grocery store, she said, at this age, a child crying hits me different than it did 30 years ago.
That's true, too.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting. It wasn't that she didn't want to do it. She just understood where she was in her life.
You know, it's really hard today is that there's so many young grandchildren being under the custody and under the care of grandparents that are beyond that point. And it's just tearing them. It's not making a good environment either direction. And at some point... At some point, we have to look back at what made us a good nation. We have to look at what made us good families. The value of the family itself and how important it was. And get back to that. Quit reaching for all the newest and the greatest change or let's do this. It'll affect us this way or that. How about we just get back to some simplicity and see what that does for us? It would do wonders. And... it's not just, it's something that everyone can do. You know, every new day starts new. There's things that we did the day before that we don't have to do, that we can change. We have to make that desire in our lives. You know very well that you cannot help anyone that doesn't desire to be changed. If you can beat your head against the wall helping them, but if they don't desire change in their heart, they're not going to change.
But why does the person who is trying to get them to change never understand that? You can say that to them, And then the person, I don't know if the person who doesn't want to change ever fully understands it, but the person who's trying to make the change in them, who you consider a rational person, you can say those exact words to them. You cannot change somebody who doesn't want to be changed. They don't get it. They keep on trying. I mean, this may be a call. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott. Just wanted to add my two cents here today. I'm enjoying the conversation. Of course, I'm over 70 now, and I haven't had a grandparent since I was a senior in high school. And people in my family used to tell me, you're getting to be just like your grandfather. And, you know, at the time, I didn't think much of it. But now that I'm over 70 and I look back, that was a real compliment.
Wonderful.
That was a real compliment, yeah. And I miss all of my grandparents dearly. I have all their pictures out still to this day in my house where I can look at them every day. But even though I haven't had one since I was a senior in high school, but I'm enjoying your conversation, and I appreciate what you're doing and what you're talking about.
Thank you. And you know, isn't it great to have those memories to go back to?
It is. It really is. It really is. Both of my grandparents raised seven children. They each had seven children, and they all turned out great. There wasn't a bad apple in the barrel, and I owe that all to my grandparents. And they were hard workers. You know, what can you say?
Hey, thank you so much for that.
Hey, have a great day.
Take care. And that's it. I mean, you go back to that simplicity of just loving and being there and parenting. My favorite times growing up, I remember, were holidays, and not because what I was going to get, but because what was going to be around the table.
Go ahead, caller.
Scott, I always enjoy all of your shows, and, you know, I've been listening for a long time, and I always say that I've given so much from your guys' shows, but I'm really enjoying this particular broadcast right now because 3 a.m. last night, my first grandbaby came into the world.
Crazy.
I'm a brand new grandma.
Oh, congratulations.
I have 10 children, and thank you.
Congratulations.
Month and a half early, 4/13, 4 pounds, 13 ounces. So.
Oh, that's plenty.
Yes. I had four children of my own, and I know that I made plenty of mistakes with them, but I'm going to get it right this time.
You know what? I tell parents and grandparents this, that you're never too late to change and make changes from things in the past. And when you do that, and when you make a concerted effort in that direction, they see that. And even though you may have thought that you made a horrible mistake that can't be redone, when they see the you that's confident in what you're doing and where you're going, they'll sit up and pay attention.
Amen. Well, thank you for the broadcast. You guys are really speaking to my heart today.
Thank you.
And congratulations on being a grandma.
Yes.
Very nice.
So, you know, those were great calls, and it just kind of reiterates what we were just talking about and reinforces that. So my thought is, why don't we all try to get back to a little more simplistic lifestyle? You know, I hear more grandparents tell me, you know, I need to get my grandparents and my grandkids in church with me. Come and sit, come. They'll have a blast. And like I said, it's never too late. I tell people constantly because, unfortunately, I see so many older people today that they've been so marginalized and so told that they're not really of much value anymore. Everything's about youth today. You know, when you're 70 years old, you're supposed to try and look like you're 15. And if we would just accept and love where we are and who we are and how God made us, you know, life would be so much easier. But I tell older people, I say, you know, until the day that you leave this earth, you have a purpose of being here. And you may feel like you're not important, no one listens to you anymore. I know those feelings. I know what it's like to be in a group of people where maybe my relevancy has gone away because of my age. And it's not a good feeling. And we've all been in that, I believe, yeah, in that situation. But the thing is, it's because many times we're trying to operate outside of our true age, and young people have been taught not to respect, not to love, not to look for the guidance of those elders that we had, like we read here in Joshua. We need to understand that if you're out there and you have wise counsel, give it. If you have wise counsel, use it. Don't just look at the world going by you and thinking that, you know, well, it's my day is beyond. That's not true at all. I like to share the story of Erigan Kaner as a young man. He was in a Sunday school class. There were, what did he say? There were seven boys. And they did, it was a small little church, and they didn't have anyone to teach them. This really elderly senior citizen lady taught that group of hooligan rough boys. And he said, you know, he said, all except one of us today is in ministry. And he said, I take it back to that time. So there's great value that we can learn from our elderly people. But I would encourage elderly people, if you're out there, to embrace your age, embrace what God has given you, and operate from a point of wisdom, not from a point of regret.
You know something very quick here. It's this really strikes a chord, because I knew a lady who lived well into her 90s, and her kids, grandkids, so on and so forth. I think they just got so used to her that even though she was in terrific health, no problems at all, still drove, she was there, and she eventually just became a piece of furniture because her kids became grandparents and they were concerned with all this. Well, what she did, instead of trying to convince them and get in on things that she was no longer being invited to, because they just kind of, it unfortunately happens. What she did was she got involved with her friends, and some of them who were much younger than her own kids, you know, come over for Memorial Day, come over for Labor Day, come over for Christmas Eve, and the people who she got involved with never knew that she had no plans, and it turned out great, and it was fun.
And you know, one thing I see is even in Sunday school classes today in churches, you know, you'll have a young adults class, then you'll have a middle-aged adults class, then you'll have a empty nester, all these different classes for groups of people. I personally think that's wrong, and I'll tell you why. I think that every generation can learn from other generations around them, and there's so much to be learned from an older generation. They may have different views. I do know that young people get tired of hearing, well, when I was your age, they don't want to hear that. But there is great wisdom to be there. And I think that we do need more of a blending pot of adults where people come together and they share their experiences and they give advice. Please, when an elderly person wants to talk to you, don't shoot them down and don't shut them out. Because the very thing they may be ready to share with you at that point may be so life-changing, and you just blew it by brushing them off. Give them the time of day. They really, I cherish elderly people. I always have. I don't know, maybe because as a young person, we always visited my grandparents on the weekend, and I'd sit and listen. And I learned so much that I've always learned that, you know, older people have a lot to say, unless they're trying to be young people. And then they lose that opportunity because they don't fit either place.
And that's the group that doesn't like, I know it's hard to say, doesn't pay attention to the older people, is the people who are trying to be young, because I think it frightens them. In a way, it's weird.
Like, what are you doing?
You know, find a person who had a good relationship with their grandparents, and you'll find somebody who likes older people and can talk to them. But if you didn't have that, it's a strange thing to watch.
Can I give you a humorous story about my grandfather?
Of course you can.
Like you, so every weekend we used to come up and see my grandparents. They lived on the west side of Columbus. We'd be sitting there, lunch and then dinner, and all of a sudden, Grandpa would look at us, me and my two brothers, and said, come on, boys, it's time to go to the basement. And you go, oh, I know what this is. You go down to the basement, haircut time. You get the clippers out, set you in a chair, and it was a buzz cut. Every week he got updated.
But didn't you kind of miss that when he was gone?
That's right. We're out of time. Do want to remind people that this show does replay on Sunday morning. That's where a lot of people catch it, 8 to 10 a.m. till 9 a.m. Wednesday afternoon, 3:10 to 4 p.m. And get it on the website. All the shows back to, I think, 2018. WWGH1071.com under Program Archives, and live every Friday morning, 11:10 a.m. until 12 p.m. Pastor, 20 seconds.
We're at prospectccf.com. And you can also reach me at 740-494-2222. If I'm not in, leave a message. I promise I will call you back. Thanks for the input today. Love you guys.
I am in the arena.
Wow. Say, Scott, were you there last night for Cruz?
I was, and let me tell you, one of the discussions yesterday certainly was on the division feeling here at the Republican National Convention, and if the booze on television was something